insights, unpredictable conversations, encouragement for your day. It's the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio.
Buenos dias and muchas enchiladas. Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. I hope you had a great weekend. Cyrus, you had a great weekend from what I heard.
It went fast.
Oh, man.
It goes fast.
It sure does. But I missed the microphone, so I'm glad to be back on with everybody. Thank you for listening. The number again, 888-914-9149. That number is sponsored by Catholic Order of Foresters, 888-914-9149. Feel free to call in now. We do have a couple lines open. That won't last long, though. Let's start off with Beth waiting in Slinger, Wisconsin. Good morning, Beth, and welcome.
Good morning, Patrick.
Good morning.
I have been struggling with, for many, many years. At 13, I was raped by my brother-in-law. I didn't say anything until I was almost 18. Just before I turned 18, I was also raped by a man that I was dating.
Let me pause for just a moment, Beth. I want to hear every word of what you're saying, but this is not appropriate for children. So parents in Houston, California, Traverse City, Michigan, wherever you may be, if you have children listening, please turn the radio down for a few minutes or send the kids into the other room. So please be prudent here. This is not a topic for younger people. And please exercise caution. So fair warning, ready, steady, go. Okay, Beth, please continue.
Okay. I then had started going to therapy.
Can you back up one step? I heard the brother-in-law part at 13.
Yes.
And then can you remind me again, the second instance, what happened? Who was that?
I was dating somebody I had just started dating, and I was 17. He was 26. And that didn't go well, obviously. I was afraid to say anything. I didn't drive at that time, so I didn't even have a way to get home. But I, kind of just moved on. I went to therapy for a little bit. I got married. My husband at the time had one time even had said, hey, what happened with your brother-in-law? It happened one time. Just get over it. Move on.
Your husband
My
said
family
that?
Kind of, yes. Hence, we're divorced, other things. But my family always, my mother had said at one point that you should be careful how you play with the boys because they don't think of you as an adult or as a child when I was younger. So that stuck in my head as in it was my fault and that it happened. I've since learned it is not. But my husband that I met a year after I divorced is totally behind me, wants pretty much nothing to do with my family for the fact that they've moved on. They've said, you just need to get over it, and they've done nothing about what happened. I've decided, I've said I forgive them. There's nothing they're going to do that's going to change it. They won't agree with me. I can't agree with them. But I'm constantly being questioned by my family why I won't just forgive and come back into the family. I went to therapy at one point, and he had said, well, if you truly want to forgive like Jesus, then you need to regain a relationship with them. And I'm finding that hard in that I feel that I have forgiven them, and I'm not hating of anyone, but I don't feel that I can go back into the relationship knowing that after I got divorced, they befriended my ex-husband. He was going to my Christmases, my birthday parties, my everythings. Hmm. And that I'm just to kind of look at, well, there's nothing we can do about it. The statute of limitations is over. He's still married. They have kids and grandkids. And I just said, that's fine. You guys can continue. And I just choose not to break bread, but it's them and my children now that are like, you need to learn to forgive, Mom. And it's like,
I have some thoughts.
I guess I just want some comfort.
Yeah.
But I'm not wrong.
I have some thoughts. I feel so sorry for you, Beth, the way you've been victimized and preyed upon this way. It's terrible and shameful. And it sounds to me, just based on what you're saying, that your family is massively dysfunctional because they won't love you and they won't help you the way you need to be helped. So I'm really sorry, really, really sorry, first of all, that you've had to go through this. I can tell you that whoever it was that said that in order for you to truly forgive, you have to have a relationship with that person is off his rocker. That is so not true. Sometimes, maybe that can be the case, but often it's not. Maybe most of the time it's not, because somebody who victimized you in that way forfeited a right to have a relationship with you. And you can forgive that person from your heart. I mean, forgiveness is often confused with the emotion of feeling like, oh, well, I guess I can like that person again. That's not what forgiveness is. True forgiveness is an act of the will in which you will the good for the other person, and you say in your heart, in whatever word you choose, I forgive you for what you did. But it doesn't mean that you therefore are somehow obligated to try to strike up a happy clappy relationship with the person who did this to you. Absolutely not. You don't have to. And I don't see how you could. Because every time you'd look at that guy, this is your brother-in-law, right? Every time you'd look at him or talk to him, isn't it the case that you're reminded all over again of what happened?
Yeah.
I would think. So that if you're looking for my opinion on that particular issue, that's it. I mean, whoever told you that you have to resume a relationship is simply wrong. And one of the dimensions of that is that it puts the burden on you, but you're the victim. So, you know, who knows how this man's life is going to end up and whether or not he will go straight to hell. He will, of course, if he doesn't repent. He owes you the apology. He owes, you know, you this debt that apparently he's blithely unaware of. I don't know. But if you think in these terms, Beth, that forgiveness is something that you choose with your will, you don't have to feel the warm fuzzies, you don't have to resume a relationship. If God did some extraordinary, miraculous healing in everybody's life and it worked out that way, great. But you should not feel as though you're doing something wrong if you don't feel the emotion of wanting to be back in these people's company. You're normal. You're experiencing normal human emotions. Do you see what I mean? In other words, don't confuse emotion with forgiveness. They're two different things.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe people have already said this. I don't know. I hope you don't feel like I'm trying to tell you things you already know.
No. I appreciate, because I've kind of pressed it out there to many people and just going, am I wrong in this? I don't feel that I have to break bread with them, so to speak, just because they are my family.
You don't.
I am polite to them when I see them, when I bump into them. I'm kind to them. I just don't choose to move forward because of the things that were said and done. And, you know, it kind of got ugly with my divorce, that they were speaking ill of me on, you know, social media, and
your parents,
I got wind
your
of it, and
siblings?
It was just so hurtful. Yes. And my mother, and it was just very hurtful. And I just look at that and going, yes, I've forgiven you, which I really don't want to, but I am, because I need to move on. So therefore, just please let me be. I've accomplished things. I'm working on my second degree. I'm happy in my relationship with my husband. You know, we are doing what we can to, you know, make a good life for ourselves and for God. And I just, I don't want to be a part of that, because I want to be around the five best people that reflect positivity, you know, and
I concur.
Like, I'm sorry.
You don't need to be sorry. I mean, I know you're saying it rhetorically. You don't need to be sorry for that. I won't ask you questions about your marriage and annulments and things of that nature, the divorce. That's beside the point for the moment. But are you Catholic? I didn't ask you that question.
I am, and my first marriage was in a non-denominational church, so I fortunately I didn't have to go through an annulment since it wasn't recognized. But
let's pause there. Let's pause there. As long as you brought it up,
yeah.
Even so, you should, you really should go through the process, and I can tell you it would be expedited for lack of canonical form. It's a very common situation. But did you your second marriage, the marriage you're in now, was that in the church?
Yes, it was.
And the priest told you that you didn't need to pursue an annulment?
Correct.
See, that too is bad advice. I'm sorry that you were given bad advice. If I were you, so it, as long as this topic came up, if I can just offer a gentle bit of encouragement here, go to a different priest. I mean, go to a parish, maybe. I don't know. I don't know what your circumstances are. But even that kind of marriage that didn't have canonical form still needs to be officially declared by the church to be null, so that the marriage you're currently in can be considered valid. So I'm sorry you were given that advice by the priest, but it's, he should have known better that this is a step that you'd still need to take. And you can still do this. You can still take that step. It's not insurmountable. But that does complicate things that in terms of like, well, what about the current marriage? And I didn't want to get bogged down for your sake in those details, but that would be my recommendation. Number one, talk to the parish priest, maybe a different parish priest, and ask him, you know, can I get the thing started for a declaration of nullity on the first marriage so the church can investigate? But I'm pretty confident the answer would be yes, it was not, or no. It's like, yes, we have no bananas, but no, the first marriage wasn't valid. But that's something for the canon lawyers to determine. In the meantime, though, you mentioned, you kind of, in passing, you mentioned counseling. And do you feel as though you've worked through the trauma that has taken place sufficiently, or do you feel as though there's work yet to be done in that area?
I think for the time, I am good. The last one was a Christian counseling center that told me that, and that's when I was like, okay, I think I'm done for now. You're not, I don't agree with that. You know, there are on occasion little triggers, but for the most part, I feel pretty good. I feel when I talk to others about it, it almost releases a little bit of pain each time. And I'm to the point where I don't think about it as much. However, as I said, whenever there's holidays, the family comes around and please come visit us. Please come for this holiday. And I politely just say thank you, but we have other plans. And I, you know, just, we don't attend. And my husband is very supportive. And he said, I will not befriend. If they treat you like that, that's disrespect for you. And so we just,
good for him.
You know, our little family is just him and I most times, because now my children have said, well, that was something that happened to you, so therefore we will continue to be with the family. And like, well, I guess that's what you have to do. That's what you have to do. I kind of thought out of respect for me, they would have not, but I don't want to tell them what they can and can't do. They are fully grown adults now, so they...
And they don't probably have any inkling of what you went through in the pain that it has caused you, because you sound like a rather composed, calm lady. So maybe they just don't, they have no way of knowing how deep the hurt goes for you.
I have touched on it with them at times, but I don't, I think it's truly not possible if you are not the person to fully understand it. And so an outsider looking in, you can feel sorry for someone, but you don't fully understand. And I get that. And I guess that's why I don't get upset that they don't. It does kind of hurt me. But at the same time, I think I wouldn't want them to tell me what I couldn't do because of their hurt. But it's a different time, and the children nowadays are, you know, there's nothing traditional about anything they do. It seems,
yeah,
you know, that kind of respect is different, but that's like a whole nother topic. But
does the whole family know about the brother-in-law situation? Does your whole family know about
siblings,
that?
My siblings all do, and I don't know about the grandchildren and like his children. I don't know about that, and I never tried to bring them into it, but we did have at one point an intervention of sorts, it seemed, because I was the only one that everyone seemed to have a problem with. And
they did an intervention with you as if you were the problem?
Oh, right, boy. As if I was the problem, because once I met my husband, I no longer wanted to be around my family because I had kind of seen that, wow, this is what support is. This is what love is and protection. And I said, I want to talk about what happened with him. And my sister said, I put it in the past. We are not discussing it. And
how about this? How about this, Beth? What if you were to...
I said, I'm done.
What if you were to send an email to the family, I mean the adults in the family, your parents, and just say, I just want to go on record since all of you seem to be so befuddled as to why I am not, you know, joining in. When I was 13 years old, so-and-so by name raped me, and the family has tried to hush-hush this, and maybe you've quote-unquote moved on, but I haven't because it happened to me. I was a child. So if you can look yourselves in the mirror and be okay with that, knowing that this happened, I mean, it'd be different if there was no evidence for it or it just was a real unusual claim and there was nothing to substantiate it or something like that. I mean, you could maybe understand if the family wasn't quite sure what to think, but, you know, you were certainly old enough to articulate what happened and you tried to. So... what about that? I mean, I don't know about statutes of limitations when it comes to this sort of thing, but at the very least, it should be, I guess, publicly said to your family, the people who are involved, this is why I don't enjoy being around you. Because you turned your back on me when I was 13, and I was victimized by this family member by name. And until and unless you can understand why what you did was wrong, no, I'm not going to join in because it pains me to be around you and you're trying to pretend that everything's great when you know it's not. And I don't want to live that way. What do you think would happen? Would that blow things to smithereens if you did that?
It may, but it would be, I think, the opportunity that I didn't have in 07.
Yeah.
That, you know, I tried to tell them that and I was shut down, and then pretty much was kind of like, well, I'm sorry, I said some bad things, where they could go, and I walked out. I said, I'm done.
Yeah.
You gave me this opportunity to come together, and I was not allowed to discuss it. I'm sorry, I can't heal until I discuss it. And it was just my siblings and my mother. And
yeah, and you can also point out, I mean, if it would help you feel better, you know, you don't get to make the rules for me.
Exactly.
You just don't get to make the rules for me. You can't tell me what I can talk about and not talk about. And if if you don't want me to talk about something that's still causing me pain, what does that say about you? I mean, your parents, you know, what does it say about your mother?
Mm-hmm.
And from what you're saying, it sounds like you're doing the only sensible thing, which is to avoid these people who are just out of their minds the way they're responding to this. I would recommend, though, I really would. I think you're probably in the Archdiocese of Milwaukee. Is that right? Or are you in Madison?
Mm-hmm. I'm in Washington County.
So that's Milwaukee Archdiocese, right?
Milwaukee, probably. Yeah.
Okay. I would go to the Archdiocesan website, and in the family, there'll be a department for marriage and family, and make contact with them and ask them for a referral somewhere in the greater Slinger metropolitan area for a Catholic counselor who can help you. It sounds as though you still need you know, to be able to talk through some of these things with somebody who's at least Catholic and who will be able to give you that. And for that matter, if you could find a good, wise priest with some gray in his hair, who's known for, you know, being sagacious and being, you know, being Orthodox Catholic, I would maybe find out if you could get spiritual direction, because that way you can combine the healing of the sacraments, especially confession. Not that you need to confess sin in this case, but a spiritual director who is a priest who can give you the sacraments as well, I think that would be another big thing to do, another helpful thing.
Mm-hmm. I agree.
So try that. I'm not a counselor, obviously, so I don't have those tools, but a trained counselor would. And that might be the very best next step. But based on what you're saying, it sounds like you're doing the only thing I would expect someone to do in your situation, you know?
Thank you.
You're welcome. I know it's hard, Beth. I know it's hard. I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry. But you have friends here at Relevant Radio. You have family here. And we love you, and we'll be praying for you. I'll be right back. Today, we'd like to thank Rosario, who is listening in New Mexico, for donating her 2014 Fiat 500. Classy. You can join thousands of other listeners in donating old vehicles, trucks, boats, and RVs by visiting relevantradio.com/car. That's relevantradio.com/car.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show on Relevant Radio. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Sorry, so I have an email of a somewhat different sort here. This is from Anne, and Anne is listening on the Relevant Radio app. And subject is, just an FYI. She says, I'm a sinner. I have committed many mortal sins in my life. These were not one-time sins. They were lifestyle sins and lasted 20 years or more. I'm sorry. I am so sorry. I'm so very sorry. I have repented. I have confessed my sins many times over. I beat myself up every day for my sins. And yet, every day I continue to look for hope. I do not find hope in your podcast, Patrick. I find legalism and condemnation. Please, no need to defend yourself. I'm just telling you how I feel when I listen to you. I have learned many things from you, thank you. Many years ago during my conversion when I was studying metaphysics and the teachings of the Catholic Church, I heard you mention Father Norris Clark's book, The One and the Many. I love, love, love that book and have read it many times without having even the most rudimentary understanding of Thomistic philosophy. It satisfied my scientific mind. And Anne is by training an engineer. Later in life, she says, though, I find I desperately need forgiveness and understanding and compassion. As much as I like you and admire you and in the life you've lived, etc., I find little comfort or hope in what you say. I'm telling you this just so you know, because there might be others like me in your listening audience. I wish you a fruitful Holy Week and Happy Easter. Well, I appreciate that, Anne. Thank you for taking time to share with me. I have to wonder if you feel the way you do, and I don't doubt that you do, maybe this is just not the show for you. And I wouldn't be offended, because I'm not here to bring anyone down. So my heartfelt advice would be, if all you hear from me is legalism and condemnation, and you don't feel any hope or you don't feel any encouragement or anything like that, Why torture yourself listening to this program? It seems it would be better for you to listen to something else. I mean, don't get me wrong. I hope you'll stay, but at the same time, I'm not here to inflict misery on you. So I don't know what else to say, but I do hope you find the peace and the hope that you're looking for. If you're not finding it here, I apologize for that, but I hope you do find it. And I thank you for taking time to write to me. 888-914-9149. How about Pamela now in Nashville? Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning, Patrick. So I wanted to piggyback on the first caller with a question as it relates to forgiveness. And similar situation, not the exact situation she had, but been married before, got remarried. My ex-husband, emotionally, mentally, and when my children were young, abused my children. Long legal battle, all of that. My husband's been an amazing stepdad, just an amazing stepdad. And when they turned 18 and they were legally old enough to be able to say, I want to be, sorry, I've got a little bit of a cold.
No,
I can be legally adopted by my stepfather, because he truly has been my dad, because I got married when they were in the kindergarten, first grade.
Okay.
Remarried. He was definitely
pause for a moment, if you don't mind, if you could just pause. So the first husband is the one who was abusing the children. It wasn't sexual abuse, though. It was other forms of abuse.
No. Yes. Okay. It was a lot of emotional damage, a lot of verbal damage, and some physical, but just mentioning my name or mentioning I love my mommy or I miss my mom, locked in the basement, having to count backwards from 100 every two numbers to get out. And just a very young age of just a lot of narcissistic / mind games on the children, which they are paying that price today as young adults. They are both young adults. But when they became 18, they were able to say, you know what? You've been my dad this whole time. I want to be adopted. I want to disown myself of my father. And both of them were devout Catholics, very active in their Newman centers at their colleges. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the things that they struggle with, that I've struggled trying to give advice for, and I think everything you're saying to that first caller is exactly spot on as far as forgiveness and so forth, is what does forgiveness actually look like? Meaning, it's one thing to say, and I've talked to my priest about this as well, I forgive him. My children say, I forgive him. You know, they actually feel sorry for him and so forth. But are we supposed to engage? And I mean, it's not safe to engage physically. Well, they're older now, so the physical part of the abuse is kind of gone. But even emotionally, they're not, especially my oldest one, she's not there yet to be able to manage any kind of interaction with him.
Okay.
Is a letter sufficient, or is it just enough just to say, I forgive him and I'm moving on, and just disassociate yourself with him and the family? Because I think forgiveness sometimes is so confusing, because you get angry, you forgive, and then you think about something and it makes you angry. Then you're like, okay, I forgive. And am I supposed to find closure? Are they supposed to find closure? Because all three of us have experienced this with him.
Is he still in your lives? Sorry to interrupt you. Is he still in your lives in some way?
No, not at all. Because now they're old. They don't have to. There's no forced visitation. There's no forced interaction. When they changed their, changed their status from new last name, new adoption, being a daughter of my husband, that dissolved that relationship. So there's no interaction whatsoever.
Got it. Okay. Fair enough. So it sounds like you've moved well beyond the real crisis point. Are you still struggling with your own sense of not quite sure if you've forgiven or not? Is that part of what you're asking?
No, I definitely have forgiven him. And, I'm not trying to toot my own horn, but I would say, since all the custody battles and fights, because there was abuse and I was trying to prove, hey, he shouldn't be seeing these kids when I had forced visitation. I offer my communion up to him pretty regularly. I ask to, I'm praying that I forgive him. Sometimes I feel like I'm struggling with the anger portion of it. But I think for my daughter, she's so devout. Not that my other child, my son, is not, but that she struggles on, is she supposed to engage? And she's too delicate yet. I could probably shield that, but she's too delicate to really reach out to him. And he knows that they've changed her last name. He knows that they've been adopted legally by my husband. But I think that she feels like, in order to be a good Catholic, she has to have this active relationship, to what you said earlier, which was beautiful, to the previous caller. You don't have to have an active relationship, because it's detrimental to your emotional, health or physical health or whatever. And she's still in counseling about all of this, because it was, you know, childhood trauma that has created a slew of anxiety and depression for her off and on throughout her adolescence and young life.
I'm so sorry to hear the damage that was done, especially they were so young.
They were very young, and unfortunately, they didn't understand, but I understood the manipulation and what was going on. And as I got older, you know, things start to present like anxiety and depression and trichotillomania and all of these things. And she's managing, and she's in a good space right now. And she goes to adoration every day. She's very devout. But I think, you know, when these things come back, she's struggling on maybe I'm going to find closure if I reach out to him live. And I don't want to give her wrong advice. I don't know if forgiveness enough in your heart is enough.
Well, let's pause on that thought right there. And I guess I'm going to repeat myself, but for effect, because I think everyone needs to think about this. In your effort to help your daughter and guide her, to point out to her that forgiveness is not an emotion. Sometimes the emotion accompanies forgiveness, where you feel a kind of peace. Not always. I like how somebody once said it, you know, to hold a grudge against somebody or to hate somebody is like drinking poison and expecting it to hurt the other person. Obviously, it doesn't happen that way. It's just bad for yourself. I heard another person just recently say that forgiveness is like a ship that is anchored. I heard this on Saturday, as a matter of fact. I thought it was really insightful. That the ship is anchored and the lack of forgiveness is the anchor. And it holds that ship in place. But as soon as you either, you know, cut the rope or the chain, or you just haul that anchor up, then you, the ship, can move freely. And that's where this tethering effect seems to come in, where people feel tethered because they don't feel the emotion, and therefore they don't think they've actually forgiven the person in question. You can forgive and still feel terrible. You can forgive and still want nothing whatsoever to do with that person ever again. And as I was pointing out to the lady who called in earlier, if you, let's take your daughter, for example, and to some extent your son, they were victimized by their biological father. They're not the ones to blame for this. And so they don't owe him. Let's just have a fun relationship, Dad. Yeah, you abused us when we were kids, but let's go see a ball game. No. He forfeited his right for them to have a relationship with him that way. It doesn't mean that it couldn't be restored, and it's always wonderful if that should happen, but they're under no moral obligation to strike up some kind of a pseudo relationship with him.
And I think that's where I'm going to pause you for a second.
Yeah,
with honor thy mother and thy father. When you honor thy mother and father, that's where it kicks her, and she's, and my son, well, my son is actually at a point where he's like, you know, kind of exactly point blank. He's forfeited his right. He's had many opportunities throughout my whole childhood, even my young adolescent teen years, to resolve this, and he didn't. So I'm done. Move on. I'm fine. Yeah. But my daughter was the older, and she shielded him through a lot of that. You know, she was the one who stood in front and took the cross heavier than him.
Yeah.
And girls are different than boys on how they manage things. And so she has some of the anxiety and depression and repercussions, and she has it under control. But when those things expose themselves and she's struggling, like, then she starts to feel resentment. Like, I wouldn't have this if it wasn't for childhood trauma, which wasn't for him. And I'm like, well, you got to go through the forgiveness cycle again. And while I'm supposed to honor thy mother and thy father, should I actively say, I forgive you by a call, by a letter? Or is me saying, I forgive you enough in my
heart enough.
And through prayer?
Enough. Yeah, in other words, if it's opportune to express that forgiveness to the other person, that's always great when that happens. But it's not necessary that it happens. You know, in other words, because forgiveness is an act of the will, even just to forgive in itself, even if you never talk to that person again, you have forgiven that person. Maybe a letter.
Well,
I didn't ask. I have to take a break. I'm sorry, Pamela. I didn't ask you about this, but I would encourage your daughter especially to get some good therapy, some good counseling therapy to help her work through this. And I'll pray that that's a quick process for her. She's suffered enough. Thank you, Pamela. I'll be right back. Thanks to network sponsor PushPay. PushPay offers parishes a platform for tracking donations and sacraments, overseeing schedules, mobile apps to help manage your administrative load, and much more. Info at relevantradio.com/pushpay. That's relevantradio.com/pushpay.
Welcome back to the Patrick Madrid Show. Have a question? Give Patrick a call. 888-914-9149. That's 888-914-9149. Patrick Madrid on Relevant Radio.
Good vibes here on the Patrick Madrid Show. You want to call? Call this number, please. 888-914-9149. 888-914-9149. Also, you can complete your Lenten journey with Close to Jesus to the Last, a five-day spiritual walkthrough of Jesus' final day before his passion. With Father Rocky's guidance, we will pause for an hour at 11 a.m. and 6 p.m. Central each day on Relevant Radio to ponder the events that culminate in Calvary, exploring each with specifically selected music and prayers today through Good Friday. You'll find a guide to all your special Holy Week programming at relevantradio.com/holy-week. That's relevantradio.com/holy-week. Let's go to Michael now in New Jersey. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Patrick. So I'm not losing sleep over this, and I'm not making a big deal. It's more out of curiosity. So yesterday at Mass, as you know, the Passion was read for the Gospel. The deacon made an announcement just as we started. He didn't state that, you know, if anybody feels, you know, is older or what have you, and you want to sit, you're welcome to it. But he just basically told the whole congregation to sit while we read the Passion. So I'm just curious, does a deacon have that authority? Is there discretion or what have you?
Well, the Mass that I attended, something similar but different happened. And that is the deacon said, if you wish to sit because it's difficult to stand, please feel free. But nothing was said about everybody sitting. So the custom, of course, is to stand during the gospel regardless. It's a sign of respect for what's happening. If you're aged or infirm and you need to sit down, that's totally fine. But I think the deacon overstepped his prerogative here because people can stand for 15 minutes. It's not going to kill them.
Yes.
And it's good to stand. It's better to stand. And certainly it's the custom to stand during the proclamation of the gospel. So I think the good deacon probably trying to be nice, he exceeded his prerogative there.
Okay. Thank you. You've answered my question.
You're welcome. Well, thank you. And happy Holy Week to you. 888-914-9149. How about Fred now in Austin, Texas? Good morning, Fred.
Good morning, Patrick.
Yes,
I was reading a Protestant theologian and historian's book, and I came across a statement that I'd like to bounce off of you to see if it's accurate.
Sure, sure.
He said a student of his was riding in a plane with a Roman Catholic cardinal, and they got to talking, and the student asked the cardinal if the cardinal was sure of his salvation. And according to the student, the cardinal said, shook his head and said, nobody can be certain of that. Now, is that a reasonable response?
Well, it's one of those gotcha questions that Protestants often try to use with Catholics. So Carl Truman is not somebody a Protestant. The call screener told me the name of the person that you're referring to.
Right, Carl Truman. He's a Protestant theologian and historian.
Yeah, I know who he is. I'm familiar.
Okay, right.
But I would just simply say that's an example of an attempt at a gotcha question. And it's not uncommon for Protestants to say to the Catholic, if you were to die tonight, would you go to heaven? And if so, why? Because they're expecting the Catholic to say something like what this cardinal allegedly said. Who knows what he said? They're expecting the Catholic to say something about, I don't know for sure, we'll find out. I'm trying to be a good person, things like that, because the gotcha response is going to be, well, you can't earn your salvation. You clearly don't know Jesus, because if you did, you would know that you have salvation. Interestingly, that figure that you mentioned is a Presbyterian, so there's a Calvinist dimension to it, which involves, you know, this belief that the elect, the perseverance of the saints, it's referred to, and that the elect have an ineluctable promise of salvation. So if you're truly one of the elect, you're going to go to heaven, no matter what you may say or do. So it's in keeping with his theological worldview to ask a question like that. If it had been me, I mean, I'm not a cardinal, obviously, but if it had been me, and he said, you know, would you go to heaven? I would ask this question. I would say, well, what do you mean by that? I would begin by putting it back on him to say, you know, tell me more about what you're asking me here. What do you mean by that? And that would give you an opportunity, of course, to think a little bit more, to say a prayer, that kind of thing, and to compose your thoughts. But to just answer off the cuff, the cardinal wasn't wrong when he said, well, only God knows that. I mean, St. Paul himself said in Philippians 2, verse 12, he said, my beloved, as you have always obeyed, so now, not only as in my presence, but much more in my absence, work out your own salvation with fear and trembling. Well, why would he say that we need to work out our salvation with fear and trembling? I mean, if you're once saved, always saved, and there's no chance that you could be lost, then why on earth would you need fear and trembling? Fear of what? And trembling for what? You know, this is an example where he's reminding believers that they don't have an absolute assurance of salvation. I think I would want to get into that kind of conversation with him and then run that into the ground, because as soon as you start going to the verses that clearly point out that believers have a moral assurance of salvation but do not have an absolute assurance of salvation.
Okay, then it could be moral and absolute, yeah.
Right, and the difference is this, Fred. You have a moral assurance of salvation insofar as God will not go back on his promises. He's trustworthy. Yeah. He will not change his mind. You, however, and I too, all of us, we are quite capable of changing our minds and backsliding and falling into serious sin. So this would be an example of where, as soon as he asked that question, I would want to get into the actual verses that talk about this. I'll give you one example, one of just many. In Galatians 5:4, St. Paul says, you are severed from Christ, you who would be justified by the law. You have fallen away from grace. Look at that passage. You can't be severed from Christ if you were never united to him. You can't fall away from grace if you didn't have grace in the first place. So the sinner who's never known Jesus, who was never baptized, never repented, or any of those things, cannot be severed from Christ. He's apart from Christ all along. He hasn't been severed as a result of this sin. And in the same way, that person can't be fallen away from grace because he never had grace. So these kinds of statements, the New Testament is replete with statements like this, that people like the Protestant minister or the Protestant theologian you're talking about would have to do backflips and somersaults to try to avoid the plain meaning of these texts. You see what I mean?
Yeah.
I figured
okay,
you would.
Okay, well, thanks. Appreciate it very much. Enjoy it.
You got it, Fred. Good to talk to you. Thank you. Let's go to Florida now. Talk to Linda. Good morning, Linda.
Oh, hello.
Hi.
Hello. Good morning. I had a question about the Easter celebration after the first full moon, mm-hmm, as an example of Christianity or Catholic Church ties to early paganism. And I need to defend that. Somebody posed that question to me, and I want to be able, mm-hmm, to answer it correctly.
Okay, so let me dust off my brain cells here. So Easter is reckoned in the Western Church. It's reckoned differently in the Greek Orthodox churches, or the other Orthodox churches, I should say. Let me make sure I got this straight. So it's the first Sunday after the first full moon of after the vernal equinox. So when the vernal equinox takes place, then it's followed shortly thereafter by the full moon. So the Sunday following that is the date that Easter is celebrated. Now, there was in the early church something called the Quartodecimon controversy that had to do with when do you celebrate Easter? And this is why even today, the churches in the East, they don't celebrate Easter the same time we do. And in a way, that's almost beside the point. But this is drawing upon two main things. Number one is the change of the calendar and the way in which the lunar calendar, which the Jews followed and to some extent still follow, was not an accurate calendar in terms of you would lose minutes and days. This is why we have leap years. This is why we follow the solar calendar. And that's been updated a few times in history. But that's where the Catholic custom comes from. And the Jews, of course, were not pagan, and they followed the lunar calendar. And they knew all about equinoxes and full moons and blood moons and all the different phenomena of the moon and how it interacted with the earth. So for the person who told you that this is some sort of holdover from paganism, they would have to indict the Jews as well. Because the Jews, who definitely were not pagans, that's for sure, they had a similar way of plotting the feast days based on the lunar calendar. Now, if you want a good corrective to the silliness, two recommendations. One would be a book by Carl Keating called Catholicism and Fundamentalism. I would write this down because this book will help you. It's like a bowling alley. I mean, every single bowling pin argument that Protestants tend to raise, or at least that type of Protestant, he just knocks them down, one after the other after the other, and he shows how you can do that. The second resource would be a series of articles written by John Sorensen. His first name is J-O-N. John Sorensen, he's at Catholic Answers. And if you just type in his name in the search bar at the website there, John Sorensen, you'll find these articles that he's written in which he takes on all sorts of these, I call them silly arguments. They seem superficially maybe persuasive to some people, but they're actually rather ridiculous when you start digging into it. And he refutes them, various versions of these arguments. I'm not so sure if he's done one on this particular topic, but I'm pretty sure that's in Carl Keating's book, as I recall. But at a broader level, Linda, it would be good for you to know how to, they set them up and you knock them down. They set them up and you knock them down, because these arguments are very flimsy and superficial. And they're not difficult to refute. So if you go there, you'll be able to get those articles for free.
Oh, thank you. What was the name of the book by Carl Keating?
It's called Catholicism and Fundamentalism. Published by Ignatius. Well,
I thank you. God bless you. And
you're
have
welcome.
A blessed Holy Week and Easter.
You're most welcome. Yeah, thank you, Linda. Hope you have a blessed Holy Week as well. Not too long from now, we'll be celebrating the resurrection of Jesus. That's going to be great. And all of your Lenten efforts, such as they've been, you'll be able to relax those. Penances, etc. That's going to be a big part of, for a lot of people, it's going to be a big part of the glory of Easter as they've gone through that difficult time of Lent and giving things up as a penance. And hopefully you found that that's been spiritually beneficial to you. It typically is. And we're almost there, almost at the finish line. But don't relax yet, because we're not quite there. We're going to get back to more of your phone calls, including emails as well, I should say. And that's all going to happen on the other side of this quick timeout. Call your friends, text your friends, tell them, hey, this show's great. You need to listen to it. And I'll be right back with more of it right after this.